Yeah, so this show, lots of suffering.
Welcome to Highly Questionable. I'm Dan Lebitard, Sarah Spain, and Dominique Foxworth in with us today. Let's get started.
Did yesterday make you believe that Luka can actually take down the Clippers?
From near the Black Lives Matter sign, after Montrezl Harrell had hammered him as a white boy in the middle of an American movement, Luka Doncic gives us something I was not expecting in 2020. A great white hope in basketball because he is a huge superstar. He makes a shot yesterday. Let's watch this. You do not see these numbers at 21 years old in a playoff game. Triple-double and then ending the Clippers this way, breaking them over his knee in this game. That shot from there has never been a good shot until the last couple of years. Always want the guy to get closer, but the basketball has changed. The skill level on these people in these playoffs has been crazy. And this guy just announced himself with a playoff moment. You need those to be great. We knew all season watching him. Wow, he's special. Wow, he's fun. But you need those moments, and he's got one on his resume already at the age of 21.
Yeah, they're tied 2-2 in this series. They could very easily be up 3-1, considering that they lost Porzingis in a game that they were in the lead of. And then Luka had an ankle injury in another game. They could be leading this series. However, I think the main injury that I'm concerned about in this series is on the other side. I think we all talk about how losing Porzingis is a big deal, but losing Patrick Beverley seemed to be crippling. Patrick Beverley offers something that their other two superstars don't, an emotional kind of center, emotional leadership, that fire that it's hard to quantify, that nerds don't like to believe exists, that stuff that's in there. They need that, and they don't have anybody to bring it to them. It's not coming from Playoff P or Kawhi Leonard at the moment.
Yeah, you hear Doc call his team emotionally weak, and you immediately think you need Pat Bev out there because they're putting 130-plus on a team without Porzingis out there with Luka on a bum ankle. I mean, first of all, there was like a million stats about Luka in this that were amazing, but I think obviously the most important is that he's only the second recipient of the Mike Breen double bang, right? You have to do a lot to get a bang bang, and he got it in his very first playoff experience here. So, I mean, listen, you can't say enough about Luka, but again, with the Clippers, if the question is, do we believe that the Mavs team can actually oust them? Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to go likely at this point, but I'm going to say absolutely it's possible, especially if Paul George continues to play the way he have. Not since 1960 has someone with at least 10 attempts per game shot as poorly as he has. 1960! We make fun of Playoff P, but this is a whole new level of I want to make some sort of erectile dysfunction drug joke here, but like this is a whole new level of lift for someone
I can't believe
that has
we
expectations
ended up there.
On them.
You were going bang, bang. He, I think, inserted awkwardly a single syllable word sex for no good reason that I could discern. That's what we're doing with this.
Okay, he got a double bang. And the sad thing about being in the bubble is that it ends there.
Is it time for the 76ers to blow it up?
It feels like we all saw this coming all season. When things were more normal, they could not win road games. They are the underachieving team of this season. We expected Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid to make certain leaps so that that would be the team that would be competing against Boston at the top of the conference standings. To see them swept out this way, to see a situation where Tobias Harris and Al Horford are making fewer threes in a playoff series than Markel Fultz, one of their disastrous process picks. When you end up in one of these situations with this kind of echoing shame, and it came with expectations, my guess is the pressure is going to be enormous to change something because the failures are profound there, and Joel Embiid is crying at the end of a season again, but there was nobility in it last year when you're knocked off by the champion on a miracle shot and Kawhi Leonard is winning the game. It's not a lot in a sweep that you can find where you're not like, oh my God, this thing's astray. They are totally lost.
Yeah, and at first you look at the box score, you see a bunch of 30-10s for Embiid, and you think to yourself, he gave it all he could. He just didn't have enough around him. It's the coaching, it's the gelling, it's the other players. But he was also a career-worst minus 53 across those four games. This was not as easy to read as just Embiid gave it his all and there weren't enough talented players around him. They do have to blow it up. Yeah, there's a bunch of Brett Brown issues that are there. There was nobody held accountable. There wasn't real leadership. There were some really weird choices being made on guys that were great defensive presences and guys that weren't
weren't asked to do enough offensively either. They couldn't figure out which players to gel together. But so much of this is roster construction. And at this point, I don't think it's salvageable, right? Like, you want to keep some sort of through line, because the process going from what it was to having the amount of talent and expectation that they did, you want it to end with something good. It's not going to. At this point, you have to take a look at the pieces you have. Say none of them work together. Say you've constructed a team that was supposed to be physical and built around defense, and that doesn't have a good one, that doesn't have the shooting that's necessary to contend right now, and just intangibly is not a team that works, right? You can look at all the box score issues and the roster issues, but more importantly, it's all the stuff that's just about attitude and leadership and focus, and it hasn't been there, and it's not going to be there with this group. So,
yeah. I believe that part of the reason why all of those kind of emotional components that you named are there and are an issue is because of the process. I think it's hard to tank in an organization and then just think that you're going to hit the switch on culture and all of a sudden everyone's going to buy in. But that aside, I think it's easy for us to stand up here and say, blow it up. But what does that actually mean in this case? Because Sarah, you went down a list of issues. Normally, when there's a team that falls short, you're like, hey, they need another ball handler. They might need another big. They need a stretch four. Maybe they need a new coach. Maybe they need to get in better shape. Maybe they need to change the GM. That is all true for this one team. So what decision do you make if all the decisions are there to be made? How do you know what the problem is if all of them could be the problem? And fixing one might change everything. Changing them all might change everything, or it all might just make it worse.
How about this, though? I feel like one of the structural flaws we're seeing exposed in real time, because the level of basketball being played in this bubble is ridiculous. That defense isn't bad. It's just that the offense is that good. And you've seen teams like Toronto go out yesterday and take 53s because the math has changed. They've built around two guys in Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, even with the evolution of the sport, where you're like, Joel Embiid making any threes is a physical freak of nature, unlike anything seen during Michael Jordan's age. But it's not enough because he's not good enough from out there. Ben Simmons won't even try from out there. And so you miss Ilyasova. You miss JJ Redick somehow. You miss these guys who can shoot from the outside like Saric. Like, you're in a place where the game has changed so quickly. And even those two mutants, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, they're not built like Antetokounmpo to dominate. So they can't do it from the places where everyone else in the sport is shooting 50 times with a shot that has more value.
Coming up next on my Soul Stevie show.
Let me settle this for a second. First Take broke out all of a sudden. Can we just marvel
tell us,
at
Dan,
the,
who wins?
Let's just marvel at the idea that the quirky millennials who are flat earthing or fighting eggs on Twitter, that the way to reach them is the 71-year-old military guy.
Could you see Greg Popovich coaching KD and Kyrie in Brooklyn next year?
We've got a Shams bomb from The Athletic, where Popovich might be part of San Antonio East, where you've got the Brooklyn Nets already with Sean Marks as their general manager, would like a culture guy at a time that Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant should probably like that. What a great transition this would be for Greg Popovich after making the playoffs across two straight decades. If he wants to try to get involved at this point in his career with nothing left to accomplish, let me go to a team that has a better chance than the one that has been built here. I understand why that would be tempting to him. I don't think that he is that interested in just his legacy in San Antonio that he can't be tempted by something like that, because it must be fun to dream about, wait a minute, I get to just come in somewhere else and get two superstars? I'd like to try that.
At 71 years old, I guess it's not that old anymore. There was a time when we were like, is Greg Popovich even going to be allowed in the bubble because of his age? And now they're going after him to coach these superstars. I think when you have a situation like that, bringing in somebody who has instant credibility helps a lot, particularly with superstars that are like Kyrie Irving and like Kevin Durant. Not that we know them personally, but compared to what we know about all these other superstars, they seem to be a particular set of guys who are unique emotionally. And I think somebody like Popovich would be good in that situation. And I also love to see Pop versus Kawhi, because Kawhi's the one player who it seems like Greg Popovich's interpersonal magic did not work on. And I would love to see that matchup at some point, maybe in the finals.
God, doesn't that feel like literal decades ago that we were trying to figure out that schism between Pop and Kawhi? Time is a flat circle. I don't know if Pop has any interest in going somewhere else. I could see him just as easily as Dan posited that he would want to go have a legacy elsewhere and pick up a team that's got built-in talent like this. I could also see him being a guy who's fine with staying in San Antonio forever and trying to work his magic on a young bunch and prove that he can do it with whatever players that you give him. But I will say, for me personally, I do want to see this, because I think that those unique, I think is a nice word of putting it, players and personalities in Kyrie and KD would have absolutely no out here if they go and they fail to thrive under Pop, because Pop has earned so much respect and so much trust in the way that he coaches and in the way he acts as a man, that if you get sensitive or you get millennial or you start talking flat earths in front of Pop, like, that's that. It's going to be nipped in the bud. And if it doesn't work, no one's going to blame Pop for it. And I think those guys are so talented. I want them to be accountable under somebody that they absolutely will not be able to blame for anything that they try to pull.
Yeah, but they're both champions already. I think that they all have the credibility too. Maybe Pop has a little more credibility because he has more championships, but it's not as if either of those guys
it's
need to prove
talent.
That they're clutch or prove
it's not the
that they can win
the
on a team.
Factor. No, it's not the talent or the clutch factor. It's how are you as a teammate? How are you as a person? How are you as an emotional leader? How are you as the guy? Because neither of those two have been the guy. As talented as KD was, that was Steph's team. As talented as Kyrie was, that was LeBron's team. Which one of them is going to ascend to be the man on this team and to be able to handle all that comes with it? We haven't seen that yet.
Let me settle this for a second. First Take broke out all of a sudden. Can we just marvel
tell us,
at
Dan,
the,
who wins?
Let's just marvel at the idea that the quirky millennials who are flat earthing or fighting eggs on Twitter, that the way to reach them is the 71-year-old military guy. Like, it's not, you got Tom Coughlin over here in Jacksonville, and then you've got a guy with an unusual reputation who would actually positively be respected by Kyrie and Kevin Durant, because everyone respects Pop. The same cannot be said true of the champions that you're talking about there, Dominic. Plenty of people don't respect those guys, no matter how excellent they are, in the way that Pop is universally respected in that sport.
Well, I mean, that's how we've done something true, though, right? You remember all those kids that would get sent away for being too social, and what that really meant was that they couldn't be contained, and then they went to some military school somewhere? That's exactly what these two guys need.
I mean, I feel like having the old guy between two young, attractive, intelligent, vibrant personalities is a recipe that works quite well, especially here at ESPN.
Ouch. Ouch.
What? What are you talking about?
I'm not 71.
Oh, you. Not you yet. Thought I was talking about you. No. No, not you, Dan. You're the young one.
How should Colin Kaepernick feel about Roger Goodell saying he wished we'd listened earlier?
All right, I am all for, in the general utopian way that we can aspire to things, giving somebody a chance to learn from their mistakes and figure things out and then speak freely about the mistake they made. But when you've got a history of corporate butt covering, and when you were part of the problem because you didn't fight for anything meaningful, when it was hard to fight for those things as opposed to now, when it's the easiest thing in the world for butt covering to say, hey, my bad, I should have listened more. You listened. You ignored, you willfully ignored and put part of the pressure on him by not fighting your owners in a way that made a difference. Throughout that league, Goodell and its leadership in the NFL got it all wrong. The admission that they got it all wrong isn't an act of nobility. All it is the most obvious thing in the world.
Yeah, we know, Roger, we know. So this was on Emmanuel Acho's web series, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. And to be frank, Emmanuel did not make it as uncomfortable as I wish he would have for Roger Goodell, because the questions were not probing and the questions didn't challenge him to speak to why he made the decisions that he did. So Roger got to come out there and say, oh, it was my bad, I wish we'd have done more. But the most interesting thing to me was Roger told a story about growing up in a household where his father was a politician. His father was for the Vietnam War and then decided to change his mind after meeting with college students and went against the Vietnam War. And Roger said that his father told him, I probably will not get reelected because of this, because Nixon will turn against him and will campaign against him and he'll lose his reelection. But Roger said his father said this was the right thing to do, so I'm going to do it no matter the cost. And the irony in Roger recognizing that there comes moments that sometimes you have to put what's right ahead of what's prudent, him recognizing that he had that moment and passed on it. Like, I feel like this is not enough just to say my bad at this point. I can't clap for you for realizing how wrong you were in the past, or not even how wrong you were, but how cowardly you were, frankly, to not stand up when you knew what the right thing to do was.
Yeah, I mean, I think if the question is how should Cap feel, I guess it's better than not admitting that they should have listened and they should have acted differently. But that's a very small concession for everything that has happened since. Roger Goodell's been a meat shield for the owners for a long time. That's why he gets paid so much, and that's the job that he does. So we can separate Goodell at times from the rest of the ownership, and the other times they're sort of this big monolith that represents the NFL. And in either case here, the actions were wrong, and now the explanation is a lie. The part about I wish we did it differently is absolutely true, because they're looking at the shambles of what resulted from the way they reacted to Kaepernick and realizing they'd be in a much different position now if they hadn't acted that way. But beyond that, everything else is we wish we would have been able to sit down with him. You absolutely could have. We weren't sure what he was saying then. You were sure, and you intentionally misrepresented it so that you could try to appeal to a certain group of people that pay your bills and that have a lot of money. All these things are sort of empty now, because we know the NFL has to, as Dominique said, piggyback on the winning side. But at the very least, I guess saying we were wrong is this bit of progress.
Do you question if this is a compelling sport?
All right, I'm told we are going out to parts unknown. Let's see what kind of mystery awaits us here.
What the?
Jump slaps.
Why didn't Sand is tiring? To give him credit.
Oh,
yes. Yes.
Why are they synchronized? Is that
yes,
part of
it's musical in nature.
If you just went, if you went two lefts, ooh, you might surprise him.
He's selling it for the call.
Oh,
oh,
sell that. Sell some of that. Oh, he's selling that. I don't believe any of that. Kids throughout this unknown land grow up wanting to grow ridiculous mustaches and put dirt on each other and slap each other. That is not a sport by any of the definitions. I don't know what that was. I do want to watch more of it, though. Sarah, what do you think? You question it?
Am I questioning? Am I intrigued? I'm all of these things. I have no idea what the hell just happened. I have a million questions, and I'm also kind of thinking that if you win, you just get the honor of slathering sand on the other person. Is that what happened at the end there?
I'm appalled, Dan. How would you say it's not a sport? It's definitely a sport. How is it any different from MMA or boxing? Those are sports. It's the same thing.
All right. Just if I chased you around different in my bathing suit on this beach behind me and we just slapped each other and I said to you, hey, I'm an athlete in a sport, you would say, yes, we are. Dan, you're now an athlete. You would say that I am an athlete if we were doing that, partaking
absolutely
in sport.
Absolutely. I wouldn't say you were an athlete. I would say you were engaging in sport.
At 4 p.m., Game 4, Rockets and Thunder. Dan, you there?
Nope.
He's frozen.
Has he been frozen the whole time? I was wondering that, because he didn't react to anything. Is it also sad that it took us that long to realize he was frozen?
Today at 4 p.m., Game 4, Rockets and Thunder.
All right, I want you to watch whenever it is that Chris Paul is anywhere, in a commercial or anywhere else, find his hands. He has unusually giant hands for a man his size. And too often, he uses it to hit people in the junk. This is a serial offense. This guy at this point is a serial junk puncher. Not just a serial murderer. This is a serial. He's got more offenses on this front than Draymond Green, than anybody. Now, what's the latest?
Chris Paul against McLemore. Little pull up three, and that's going to be
an offensive foul. Again, giant hands he's doing that with. Yes. That's one way to do it. That's going to get. He's got so many of those on his resume. Yeah. Sarah, are you intrigued?
Harmless. Yeah, sure. I'm very intrigued. I think I finally figured this out after years of wondering what was going on here. I think Chris Paul keeps confusing nut cutting time with nut punching time. He thinks it's clutch time and he knows what he's supposed to do, and then somewhere there's a disconnect.
Okay, you know what, though? It's so unfair. He won that game against Houston. Like, at the end of that game, he was great. And look at the only thing we're covering around here. What are you? Are you intrigued, Dominique?
Yeah, I'm intrigued by the basketball game, not by where Chris Paul's hands end up necessarily. But the funny thing is, we find ways to explain these things away for the people that we like and respect. And Chris Paul, everyone says he's just a consummate professional or a consummate pro and competitive. He's more competitive than anybody else. No! He's a ball banger, and you need to stop it. It's not okay.
He is. There's a State Farm. Listen to me, State Farm. Your wholesome image is being corrupted by what he is calling accurately. He's a ball banger. Our work is done here. If you want more Sarah Spain in your life, That's What She Said is the name of the podcast. Check it out wherever you get your podcast. Dominique is a failure at life, failure at sports. He has no podcast. You have nowhere to find him via podcast. He's the last person who doesn't have a podcast.
Just watch the show. You'll see me every Monday.